one. And there that goes. YouTube, video recording, podcasts, audio recording, WineCellarMedia.com, Phoenix Kaleeder, and John Michael, and or JM. You better respect this individual. And let's go ahead and get into it.
In Father Teresa's Wine Cellar, we believe all oppression is intersectional. And this means our analysis of current events frequently includes discussion of difficult and explicit content. Any combination of the following topics could be included in our show: murder, rape, war, climate change, racism, sexism, violence, sexual violence, homophobic violence, heterocentrism, discrimination and abuse against individuals of nonconformist sexuality, domestic violence, child abuse, child rape, child neglect, elderly abuse, verbal abuse, police brutality, microaggressions, ableism, cyberbullying, genital mutilation, ideological extremism, and people just being total fucking assholes.
Yes. And welcome to the Wine Cellar. We are hanging out today with John Michael, a.k.a. JM, who is visiting us because you are running for what?
So I am running for the United States Senate against Kamala Harris. Well, as of right now, it's against Kamala Harris. But we know that Senator Harris has declared her plans for next year already. But we are moving forward with the assumption that I will be running against her for the seat that she currently holds.
Okay, excellent. Now, I have to ask the most obvious question. Why are you running?
So, I mean, that's a great question. I think that the main reason that it boiled down to for me was that California has not had a progressive champion. When we think of California, we think of it as being this blue state of, you know, progressive ideals, and we're just so advanced on everything, and we're the leader when it comes to progressive ideas, and it's just simply not true. We've had pretty much neoliberals from Barbara Boxer and Dianne Feinstein. They've represented us in the Senate for the last, before Kamala took her seat, Boxer's seat, for 20 years. And then we had Kamala come in, and obviously her past record, which I know we're going to discuss, and I'm sure, her past record as Attorney General and San Francisco prosecutor pretty much is a continuation of that neoliberalism, that ideology of, hey, look, we're going to do what's best for the corporations above the people. And so the main reason why I decided to run was, look, California needs to be the leader. We're the sixth largest economy in the world. We just passed up France this past year. We are a bastion of what it means to have American exceptionalism in a way, and in that idea that America can't be the leader in terms of not only economic power, but in terms of how we treat people. And California should be at the forefront of that. And we just don't have the elected leaders in Congress right now, especially in the Senate, that are standing up for those ideals. So that's why I decided to run.
Now, is there any chance that you're on a Bluetooth or you have a headset in?
No, I actually am just on my phone, just on the regular, not even on speaker or anything. Can you hear me okay?
Yep, all right. Yeah, it's a little gruff, but we're going to work it out. Right on.
Yeah, well, we got it. We got it.
I'll do the best I can. My reception in my house isn't the best, so if I need to leave and go somewhere and maybe park at Starbucks or something, I can do that.
Nah, stay there. It's going to work out.
There's something fun about doing podcasts from... There's something fun about the idea of doing a podcast from a Starbucks parking lot. There really is. I gotta say,
I've done a few interviews from the Starbucks, so I'm not opposed to it. You say the word, and I have a Starbucks down the street, and I'll have to say the word.
That's fun. All right, so all right. The first time I saw you was in one of my Twitter threads, where I did just a quick little rundown of some of Harris's work, if you will. And I was surprised because I kind of, when I make Twitter threads, I sometimes feel like I'm like yelling into the void, right? Like you never know who's listening or who agrees with you or who's paying attention. So I was a little bit surprised to see somebody who may be running for the seat that she has right now was so much more progressive. So thank you for being a little bit of a breath of fresh air there. If you just had to go through a couple platform points that distinguish you from Harris, what would they be?
Yeah, so I think that what we have come to notice, and I will say this, thank you for, you know, following me on Twitter. Thank you for doing what you do on Twitter and for posting the truth. You do a great job of that. I know Anoa, I don't know if you're from the, I'm not sure if I'm saying her name right, but Anoa, I know she does a great job of that. Beth Lynch, 2020,
yes.
AKA Kamala Harris is a cop. She does a great job of that. Indie Mama. There's a lot of people, especially a lot of black women who are really doing a great job of calling out Kamala Harris and saying, look, no, she's not worth that. And she might be, you know, skin folk, but she's not kin folk, right?
Right.
She might have our skin color, but she doesn't have our best interest in mind. And I appreciate all the black women that are out there that are doing that on Twitter. So as far as to your original question, as far as my platform goes, so we are very, very big on not putting things on our platform that we are not going to get out into the streets and make a noise about.
Okay.
So everything that is on my platform, I have either pictures of me or videos of me or both of me supporting these things. So number one, I think, would be we definitely are for Medicare for All. And when I say that I'm for Medicare for All, I mean that I went to Sacramento during we have what was known as SB 562. That was the bill to bring Medicare for All to California. I traveled to Sacramento for the hearing for that bill. I took pictures with other people. I protested and held my sign and wrote my reason why I was for Medicare for All. And so when I say that I'm a champion for Medicare for All, I don't mean, oh, I'm going to say this because I think that's what y'all want to hear. I'm going to say that because that's what I heard was the best solution, period. It's the moral thing to do. It is the unequivocally the cheaper thing to do from what I've heard from, you know, there was a doctor that spoke, there were, you know, a couple physicians, a couple of business owners, chamber of commerce leaders. They all said, hey, look, this is the way to go, sort of thing. And so Medicare for All, I think, definitely is number one on the list.
Okay.
Another one for me is the Green New Deal. I know that Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez has gotten a lot of press for pushing for the Green New Deal. And let's be honest, hers is a watered-down version of the true Green New Deal, which is the one presented by Jill Stein and Ajama Baraka. Those are that's the real Green New Deal that has the social justice aspect behind it, that has the, hey, look, we have to reform police. You know, we have to take an action on police brutality and reforming how our police work in this country. We have to begin to treat each other with that ideal of we're all human beings, we're all in this together, or Green New Deal is meaningless if we can't get past that idea that some people's lives are worth more than others. And so definitely that would be number two, is that fighting for a Green New Deal, a true Green New Deal that embraces not only the environmental aspect, but also the economic and social justice as well. And I think the third, if you wanted just one more, I would say for me, definitely, it's the idea of, I don't know if you all are familiar with modern monetary theory, but for me, that's a huge piece of our platform because it explains so much about the federal macroeconomic approach to how the federal government actually spends money. And the basic premise is federal taxes don't pay for federal spending. They just don't. That's just the facts of it, right? The government spends money first and then taxes it back and takes that money out of the economy. So we have these people that are always asking, how are you going to pay for this? Sort of thing. How are you going to pay for a Green New Deal? How are you going to pay for Medicare for All? Well, it really, I mean, we can pay for anything we want to pay for. The question is, do we have the courage to go ahead and pay for it? And I think part of our platform looks at investments by the government spending as investments in people. And investments have returns. Right, they have returns on investment. So if we invest in this child to get braces, or we invest in free college for these people to go to school and get their degrees, they'll pay back those dividends on the back end.
Right.
So let's invest that money now. I don't know if that makes sense.
No, that totally makes sense. And I think that a lot of people don't necessarily think about that in terms of the government budget, where you know, we pass legislation. It's like, well, this tax is going to come back and help us next year, right? I think a lot of people don't necessarily think about that. Or think about how, you know, a lot of it is, to a certain extent, speculation. It's, okay, so if we put a tax on this, we should get this much back. Or if we, you know, lower the cost of this, we should be able to get this many more people, you know, able to purchase a certain product or a service. So, yeah, no, I totally get it. But it's, I guess
yeah,
I was a little...
that's the basic premise of it.
Go ahead.
No, I didn't mean to cut you off. I'm so sorry about that.
No, you're fine.
No, you're right. That's exactly right. We need to begin to look at people and the money that we spend the government, I should say, spends the economy as an investment in people. Mm-hmm. The government does not operate on what would be a traditional household budget, you know?
Right.
The government does not have those limitations. You're only limited by real resources, demand for labor, et cetera, et cetera. Those things are, and that, you know, I will actually say also too, we're for a federal job guarantee. We firmly believe that a life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness, it is fully in line with the government saying, hey, look, if you're unemployed and you need a job, whether this is a job that you're going to do long term, or this is a transitional job until you go back to the private sector or until you finish school or until you do whatever, mm-hmm. if you want a job, we're going to provide that for you.
Right.
The government has the power to do that, and they should do that. That's, mm-hmm. You know, and they should pay those jobs, pay for high paying jobs for people out of, again, morality. I feel like there's a lack of morality in the government. And mm-hmm. lots of other things, but especially when it comes to that, we should not have citizens that are capable of working, literally, you know, making it paycheck to paycheck, or starving, or not taking a job because they it's not going to pay them enough, or they don't get the job. The government can prevent those sort of things, and I feel like that's where we need to be at, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that totally makes sense. I like that. So now, also speaking of living wages, where are you at with the Fight for 15 or Fight for 22, or what are you doing?
So I'm pushing for 22, and I know that some people are probably going to scream that that's a little bit low too. We think 22 is low as well, but we're willing to shoot for 22. Now, do I think 15 is a decent compromise? I mean, yeah, I guess we'll take 15, provided that it's a step on the way to getting to a living wage. Like you said, that's the key word there. We shouldn't be paying a minimum wage in this country. We should be paying a living wage.
Mm-hmm.
And so even if, you know, someone, I think we factored it out, or one of my supporters factored it out. They said, well, 22, even only that only comes out to 40 grand a year at 22 an hour.
Right.
You know, most people are going to struggle in most parts of the country to live off of 40 grand a year still.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea that, whoa, 22 is way too much. That's insane. What are you trying to do? You know, it's just laughable, frankly. You know, and then I've had people say, well, what about the kid that's going into college, that's in high school working for their job? And I'm like, well, where are you at on free college? Because if you're not on free college, then that kid needs to make $22 an hour to pay for college.
Right.
They got to pay for books. They got to pay for, you know, supplies. They got to pay mm-hmm. for a lot of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, that kid needs to make $22 an hour just like, you know, you do, just like I do. They have to invest in their future as well. And so, yeah, I think Fight for 15 is okay. I think it's low. I'm going to fight for 22. By the time we're elected, if we're lucky enough to serve the people of California, it's probably going to be closer to 25.
Mm-hmm.
By the time inflation, you know, we're talking 4 years from now, 5 years from now almost, it's probably going to be closer to 25 that we're going to fight for.
Mm-hmm. Now, in addition to living wages, do you also support other types of ways to help people, as far as like rent caps or cost of living adjustment caps? Like, because that's always one of the things is like, well, if you just raise minimum wage to whatever, then the rent's just going to increase and medical premiums are just going to go up and it's not going to matter and it's going to be exactly the same. Because that's always one of the first arguments, you know?
Right, absolutely. What's the cost of milk going to be? $22 a gallon?
Right.
Yeah, I've definitely heard that come back as a response. I think Kenneth Mejia, I don't know if you're familiar with Kenneth Mejia.
Yes,
he was a candidate
yes.
who ran here in L.A. He was,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, I love Kenneth, right? I
yes.
love Kenneth. And one of the things that I think he mentioned was that when he was fighting for tenants' rights in L.A., because he does a lot of work with the Tenants Association in L.A.,
mm-hmm.
One tenant had their rent raised, I want to say, 33% in their new lease.
Wow.
Stuff like that is easy fix, right?
Mm-hmm.
They shouldn't, a tenant, or I should say a landlord, should not be able to raise their rent more than, I would say, if we're being generous, like 5%.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in a lease term. And I think that that's generous. I think it's more closer to probably 3%. That's probably about fair.
Mm-hmm.
I think we definitely can look at rent adjustments. I know that we have a law here in California that we looked at reinstating. It was the Costa-Hawkins law, I want to say,
mm-hmm.
Where it reintroduced rent control. I see no reason why we can't look at that for, you know, for a national plan. Why can't we not And then also, too, another thing that we've looked at is raising Social Security or making Social Security have not only COLA adjustments, cost of living adjustments, mm-hmm. but also making it geographically based. Because you figure the Social Security earner or recipient gets about $1,200, give or take, per month. Mm-hmm. That $1,200 is going to get them a lot farther in Arkansas than it's going to get them anywhere in California.
Right.
Or New York or you know, Chicago, mm-hmm. et cetera. So we think that that's a great idea, too, is changing the way Social Security is structured and changing the way that it's paid out to people to be based on where they're currently living. So if they live in a high, you know, high demand area or high price area, they might get, you know, a few hundred dollars more a month. Or if they live in a lower area, they might get a little bit less because it's not going to cost them as much to live there.
Right. Right. No, I like that. I like that. Because, yeah, people for some reason get really, wild when you be like, yeah, I think that we should have rent caps. I'm like, what? You can't. But the landlords need to make money. And it's like, they're making money. We okay. Like, you know. But, yeah, for some reason, the idea of taking money away from rich people and landowners is a situation. I'm not really sure why. Well, actually, no, I do know why, but it's still ridiculous, you know.
Yeah, it's definitely a situation, and I think it's so interesting because most people that can afford to own more than one house, mm-hmm. They can afford to do so comfortably.
Right.
I don't know anyone who knows more than one, who owns more than one house, who does so and like struggles to make it paycheck to paycheck to do so. That's just not logical. Right. And so the idea that we need to do extra favors for them to make sure that they are comfortable to me is kind of just, like you said, it's an interesting kind of psychological aspect into who are we really trying to take care of.
Right.
We're looking at people who own more than one house that are renting their house out. In most cases, it's not that they even own two. They probably own three or four at mm-hmm. minimum. Mm-hmm. So who are we really trying to take care of by doing these people favors, so to speak? And so I agree with you. I think that there's lots of ways to look at it. We could do the rent control. We could do, you know, like you said, cost of living. And also, too, I like the idea of setting caps or setting a price range. Like, you can charge this month this much from this much based on the area that you're living in, based on the apartment that you are renting. Mm-hmm. This is what is acceptable range for that area. And if they're not in that range, well, then maybe they need to sell their house to someone
right.
who can actually, you know, who's going to take care of it, who actually will fall in that range, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So now, of course, I have to ask, because this is one of the hot button issues in the groups that I'm in, right? So all my particular subgroups. Sex workers' rights, what's up?
Yes. So as we both know, Kamala was instrumental in pushing for the end of Backpage. She was one of the main people who pushed for that. And so my thing boiled down to this. Number one, I think prostitution and or sex work should be legalized fully. Mm-hmm. Do I think it should be regulated? Meaning, do I think that people should be required to be tested for STIs and HIV, et cetera, et cetera? Yeah, I think that's a common sense solution. Okay. I don't see why the government's position or job should be to regulate a business transaction between two consenting adults. And by doing so, all we are really doing is placing those workers in more danger.
Right.
We see it all the time, at least here in California. We have headlines of people being, I saw one the other day of an alleged prostitute being, stabbed by a client mm-hmm. because he didn't want to pay. Well, if that client wasn't maybe, or if that worker wasn't necessarily booking him in a, you know, seedy hotel sort of thing, if she was working for a company that mm-hmm. was established and had security and provided, you know, protection, et cetera, et cetera. Not only is it better for her, you know, health and well-being, not only better for her pocketbook, it's also going to be better for her safety. And so, to me, this idea that, you know, sex work is nasty or that people are disgusting for doing it, sex work is work. They're providing a service that people want to buy. Mm-hmm. I don't see any reason why the government should be telling people that they can't provide it. And more so, why should the government be punishing those people for doing that? And it's, mm-hmm. I mean, it's consenting adults. It comes down to the fact that it's two consenting adults. I see no reason why we can't get behind making changes and coming off of that punitive approach to sex work. Does that make sense?
That absolutely makes sense. I can dig it. Now, if you were to win this seat, would you ever consider doing something like trying, not that it would pass, because I know, but trying to draft something that would maybe repeal SESTA-FOSTA?
Yeah, I would love to look at that. I mean, I know that there's been lots of different shutdowns. Like Backpage was shut down. Mm-hmm. I know that the personal sections on what's it called, Craigslist, has been shut down now because Craigslist is saying, hey, look, we don't want to be held liable if something happens, sort of thing.
Right.
I feel like this. I'm sorry.
Right. Oh, I was just gonna say. So, like I don't know how familiar you are with Sesta Fosta. Just off the top of your head, but the idea is that any third party, so that would be Craigslist, Backpage, Redbook, anybody else, can be held liable for human trafficking should there be any transactional
right.
So it's like allegedly, allegedly, this was put in place to help people. Uh-huh. But from where I'm sitting, from my communities, both people who have been trafficked, people who are in the sex work industry are all just saying that we're really unsafe right now because we can't screen clients. It didn't help anybody, you know. And, of course, then going back to street sex really work. So, yeah.
And I'm not, like, super, super familiar, so I really appreciate you, expanding even more on it because mm-hmm. That's what I thought it was, but I'm glad that you clarified for me.
No
problem. And, yeah, I mean, obviously, trafficking is a huge issue, but we need to look at, you know, common sense ways of making that work better. And so mm-hmm. one of the ways I think would be legalizing it. If we legalize prostitution or sex work, if we legalize escort, and we, you know, regulated it, made sure that we regulated the industry, made sure that the businesses that we're going to operate mm-hmm. operated under certain circumstances. Would there still be people that would be trafficked? Yeah, absolutely.
Right.
Would there still be people who chose to operate outside of those laws? Absolutely.
Right.
But why? I think there would be a lot less women and men, because men are sex workers too. Let's not get confused.
Right.
There'd be a lot less women and men who would choose to operate under subpar conditions when they could probably make more money and probably be safer and be legitimized by working for a company that follows law. And so, you know, that's my opinion. I don't know if you have any other thoughts on it.
What I would add to that just is that there's, like, a lot of debate between legalizing and straight-up decriminalizing. And I understand the argument to say that if we legalize that people will be... you know, safer because they can work for a company. But my biggest thing is, even if we went that route, what I would really, really love to see is sex work straight up decriminalized. So even if someone doesn't go work with, like, an official legal agency, that should police find them, that they're still not going to risk arrest and jail time. Because that's just, it's just purely punitive. Purely punitive.
And this is me popping in there. So people play like they're disgusted by sex work because sex dirty, nasty.
Right.
But perfectly fine with Cinemax existing, all the pornography websites existing. If they're in a city like Orlando or New York or Los Angeles and they see some people, young people, probably college age, mm-hmm. having sex in a car, they're like, oh, they're getting some, get it. So people are not, it's disingenuous.
Right.
Folks are not really disgusted by sex.
Right.
It's a capitalism thing. They're disgusted by the worker owning and operating their own means of production. I'll turn my microphone back down.
Yes, that is...
I absolutely agree. I think that's a big part of it. I think mm-hmm. that people that are repressed, that tend to not be able to live out their sexual fantasies or mm-hmm. or desires or whatever you want to call it, that don't have mm-hmm. that... I don't know what the proper word would be here, but don't have that ownership of their own sexuality and their own desires, they're more likely to point the finger at someone else and say, mm-hmm. you know, hey, that person's gross or that person's nasty. I feel... Mm-hmm. all the time in my own life, being a gay man, having people tell me, you know, that I'm disgusting or I'm a pedophile, and it's like, really? Like, because I am okay with who I am and you're not? That's what it comes down to. So I agree with that,
Oh, really? It's 2019 and we're still doing the gay people are pedophiles? All right, well... All right.
Oh, gosh. If you want to hear a funny story, I can tell you one.
Oh, yeah,
If you want, I'll tell you a story.
Yeah, I love stories.
Okay, so...
all the stories.
I recently did a fundraising... I'm sorry?
Because, like, the idea behind gay people are pedophiles, so that means R. Kelly is gay, right?
No, it's totally normal when hetero people do it. It's only bad when gay people do it. Did you not hear what Erykah Badu had told you? It's normal for grown men to be sexually attracted to teenage girls. Erykah Badu had been told you. See, he's acting like he doesn't know what Erykah said. I'm sorry, no. We tangent sometimes. Hard. Sorry. But
it's true though. It's just a disgusting, you know, whole attitude. And recently I did a fundraiser, so I'm a member of the Kiwanis International, one of the clubs. And we decided we were going to have a drag queen bingo sort of thing. Well, Kiwanis is all about raising money for kids.
Right.
So originally when I posted this in one of the local groups, I said, hey, look, we're going to be raising money for, you know, one of the local junior high schools for their GSA, their Gangster Alliance, for those of you who don't know. We're going to be raising money for them. And the people in my area are very conservative. I live in a very conservative part of California. Uh-huh. And so when they got wind of it, they saw, and I think they thought we were going to have kids in drag or that we were going to have the kids at the bingo. And it was like, no, it's an adult-only event. There's no kids that are going to be there. But they just took it and ran with it. And so I had people calling me a pedophile. I had people saying, oh, this is how they're going to indoctrinate the kids. And, like, this is where it starts. And so, you know, the whole thing was just a mess. But, yeah, it's 2019, but we're still doing that. It's 2019, but we're still doing that whole thing. So
it's the gay agenda. It's going to get us all, actually. True story. But yeah, so, but after that tangent, because we love
step
tangents.
One, have brunch.
Step three involves glitter, I'm quite sure. I don't know what step four is, because I'm only bisexual, so I only have, like, half the manual, so I don't have, like, the whole gay agenda.
Okay. We only give you half of it. We need for you to fully go all the way, then we'll give you the rest of it.
But no, I find that, you know, getting back to sex work, that, like, a lot of sex workers are either women or LGBTQ folks, a lot of trans folks, non-binary folks, who, for various reasons, under essentially a white supremacist, patriarchal, capitalist society, you know, like, all the words, haven't been able to follow the rules and survive. So they found a way outside of what is deemed acceptable, and that's a problem, and people really don't like it. It's like, but you're gay, you're not supposed to be able to survive, you're supposed to be less than me, and I can just make fun of you, or, you know, you're trans, I'm supposed to be able to just, like, shit on you whenever I want to. And so it's like, people really dislike sex workers, and it's, you know, I would love to see a lot less stigma. And, you know, I would love too that maybe next time they pass some sex work legislation, they actually talk to sex workers. That would be pretty friggin' amazing. Okay. As well.
Yeah, it would. Definitely. And there's a lot of them here in California. There's a lot of sex workers here in California. Obviously we are the hub for the porn capital of the country, as you would say. And so, you know, there's a lot of porn production that goes on here. There's a lot of porn stars that live here and work here. Mm-hmm. And so I think that, yeah, that should have been something that they were consulted about. It should have been taking their opinion. But again, what a senator can't be seen talking to a sex worker. Oh, my God. She's a porn star. Unless, of course, it's Stormy Daniels and we're using her to, you know, beat Donald Trump over the head. That's okay.
That's okay.
But that's you see my point there. There's a double standard.
Oh, of course. Which, of course, I love too. That's my favorite thing now is liberals are like, we love Stormy Daniels because she's taking on Trump. And it's like, so you're going to stop posting those nudes of Melania, though? Oh, no. Okay. No, you're not. Okay. I was just checking because I thought we were doing the, like, pro sex worker. Oh, just that one sex worker. Got it. Yeah.
Right. Absolutely. Right.
You know.
And yeah. So to your original question, though, would I be willing to support legislation that would undo what's already been done? And yeah, I would definitely look at that as being a viable option.
Yes.
Again, it comes down to either consenting adults who want to provide this service. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter if we think it's icky or gross. If you don't want to do that, then don't buy it.
Right. Exactly.
Don't go to a prostitute or you know, don't go to a sex worker. Mm-hmm. Move on with your life and accept the fact that they're going to move on with theirs and they're going to make their money doing what they do. And that's okay. There doesn't need to be any shame behind it or stigma behind it, I think is my point.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Stigma is what gets people killed. So yes, no more of the stigma.
Yes, absolutely.
So then also, let's see, I had like a whole random list of things. Tell me about
funding. Go ahead. Give it to me. I'll answer anything.
Tell me about funding public education. My co-host just snatched my pen out of my hand.
Or not.
I did not know that. What do you teach?
So I'm actually a teacher. I'm actually a substitute teacher. And okay. So I actually work in schools. In fact, after, right before I called you, I came from a local high school that I was living at.
Okay.
And so I spend my days in the classroom from 7:30, give or take, till 3, give or take.
Mm-hmm.
I spend my time educating America's youth.
Excellent.
Some people like to say, you know, subs aren't real teachers. And the last time I had a kid tell me that, I told him, so actually, subs are the best teachers. You want to know why? Because we have to know how to teach all ages, right? I have to know exactly what is acceptable for every grade level. I teach everything from kindergarten up to, you know, seniors in high school.
Oh, wow.
So I've seen kind of firsthand what the cuts in the classroom look like, what the what the lack of investment in education and an opportunity for our children, exactly what that translates to. And so for me, funding for public education, there are lots of ways that we can do it. I think part of the true Green New Deal, to go back to that, is cutting the military budget by 50%. That's a lot of money that we can reinvest into lots of things. Infrastructure, education is a big thing. I believe personally education is a big deterrent for almost every negative path in life,
from
drug use to, you know, I'll say this, I'm a recovering drug addict, so I'm not looking down on anyone who, you know, has done that in the past because I've been there. But it's a deterrent for so many different things, from drug use to homelessness to gang violence. The list goes on and on. And so I think definitely I've seen what schools that invest in their education system look like, and I've seen what districts who do not look like. And there is a difference when you have kids that are learning STEM, which is science, technology, engineering, and math. Some people call it STEAM. They add art in there. When you see those kids who are really invested in that approach, where the school is really saying, these are the things that you're going to need to learn to be successful. And when you have the schools that are stuck still kind of on that old school approach of, hey, look, learn all of these things so we can check all of these boxes and meet all the requirements that the state and the federal government tell us we need to meet. There needs to be some sort of shift in the way that we think about education. And it does involve money. There is going to need to be a cost that needs to be paid as far as that goes. Does that answer your question?
Yes.
Whoa.
Oh, really?
So what you're trying to tell the people is that you know more about education than Betsy DeVos?
I would say that being a teacher in the school and not a billionaire heiress who has never attended public school, nor has her children, nor have her grandchildren, I would say, I probably would know a little bit more than Ms. DeVos. Yes, that's correct.
Okay, so is it fair to guess that you are standing with the LA school teachers right now?
Oh, yeah. And I think it's funny because we, on Sunday night, as soon as we knew they were for sure going to strike, because originally they were going to start striking, I think, the week before.
Okay.
But they moved it. And so our team kept close updates on it. We kept track of what was going on. As soon as we found out they were striking that Monday, Sunday night, I had my red shirt ironed and my, you know, slacks and everything ready to go.
Nice.
And of course, you know, Kamala took a while to come to the conclusion that, hey, she should support the teachers. And so we saw her picture. We saw her picture and her support come on Friday after it cleared the focus group. You know, she had to run it through the focus group and see what they thought first. But for us, it's a no-brainer that, you know, hey, we need to stand with the LA teachers. I'm a teacher, so why would I not stand with the teachers in there? Because they weren't striking for just their pay. They were striking for, again, student resources, student class sizes, lots of great things. I think that there should be a limit to student class sizes. Again, I've been in classes where there were, you know, 20 kids, and I've been in classes where there were 35. And the difference is just, it's extraordinary. I mean, we're talking about double the class size almost for a lot of these classes. And so, for us supporting LA, the LA teacher strike was a no-brainer, of course, yeah.
Oh, wait a second here. So, the claim you're making, to be clear, is that you are claiming that you were for the people before Officer Harris?
Yes, I would say that I was, on Monday morning, I was wearing a red shirt that had the word United in it. And I took pictures. You can find them on my Instagram. You can follow me on Instagram, JM for California, or on Twitter, JM for California. The pictures were there. And we put our pictures Monday morning. We said, we are with you. We're with you in spirit. I wish that I could go down there. I'm about 2.5 hours north of LA.
Okay.
And obviously this happened during the week. And so for me taking off a week of assignments that I'd already scheduled, because we can accept our assignments ahead of time. So I already have my week booked. Mm-hmm. For me to cancel those and go down there was just not a feasible option.
Right.
But if I could have, I would have been down there right with them, striking with them. So, yes, right. I would say that we came to the conclusion that supporting LA teachers and all teachers all over that are striking right now. We had Louisiana, I think, that was looking at striking. We had Oklahoma. We're for all of that. We think that teachers do not get paid enough. We think teachers, again, me as a teacher, my job kind of consists of lots of things. I'm a counselor. I'm a cop in a lot of ways, not a Kamala cop, but I'm a cop. I'm a counselor. I'm a teacher. I'm a, friend and a mentor and a role model. And there's all this stuff that goes into teaching. We definitely want to support our students more than anything because they're our future. And I don't see how anyone can not put that through a focus group and just come to that conclusion being a human, I guess.
Well, she had to take some time off between dancing to Cardi B and eating egg sandwiches in New York City or something. I don't know. Delis, very, very popular.
She did sell her book. She had a book that she was pushing as well. Book. I don't know if you saw her asking the reporter, did you see my book?
I saw that. I saw it. I am I'm not a fan of Kamala Harris. I'm still starting to get in the habit of saying Kamala instead of Kamala, because I've been saying Kamala this whole time.
Dark-skinned white woman.
She can't be black with us. she's not allowed.
But you didn't see her video, though? You saw her dancing. Yeah. Trying to say, we not going to do this. I was like, okay, Kamala. Okay,
I'm
girl.
Still,
I think you have blood in you. Okay.
Yeah, I'm still a little bit confused since she gave her playlist talking about I love Tupac and The Roots and...
So she likes Tupac's song Changes?
Huh? She likes California Love that clearly has no references to no illicit activity at all, and she definitely would not have tried to prosecute Tupac had she been an AG at the time, is the important thing.
If the corporate Democrats get in, it ain't nothing but a gangsta party.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, so I don't like her. I really don't. And I'm just gonna just for funsies. I've made several threads about her. Actually, it's it's something that I do at this point. It's just like, hey, did you know that Kamala did this? Whatever.
The firefighters.
Oh right, yes, yeah. Yes. They actually did not make my thread.
Ma'am,
I know. It was one thread. There's going to be more threads.
See, niggas with freckles, ma'am.
Why you gotta talk about my freckles,
ma'am?
Yes,
they are biological glitter. You
they
know
are
that.
Biological glitter. They're amazing. I love my freckles. So just a couple things, which I gotta. I'm kind of shady. I don't care. Someone named WonderMan5 on Twitter felt a need to engage with me and said, no shade, but you sound very naive about how life works and how the system works. And to be honest, it's not going to stop her from running and possibly winning. So just stop. I was like, what? Really? So I was like, here's some of her policies. Aside from Sesta Fosta, which is very personal to me because lots of my friends are in the sex work community. So, hey, there's that. These are just some quotes from Kamala about her tough on crime policies. Because this is the thing about Kamala, right? Like, people get fooled, I think, because she says, I'm smart on crime. I'm not tough on crime. But then when you look at what she actually does, it's like, this is just tough on crime, though. It's just some things. The Supreme Court in 2011 found a lack of access to medical care in California prisons due to overcrowding was cruel and unusual punishment, but Harris represented California and the governor in fighting to release fewer prisoners than courts ordered. That sounds like tough on crime to me. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, she doesn't want to get rid of that valuable labor pool. I'm sure you've got that quote from her, but that's a valuable labor pool. I don't know if you're aware, but we have... we have lots of prisoners that we use to fight fires here in California, which we've had a lot of. I don't know if you're familiar with the Cat Fire that happened this last year. But we put them to work for, I think it's $2.13 a day that we put them to work. So we definitely cannot afford to lose that valuable labor pool. So,
Yeah, like $2.13. That's like a bacon McDouble. I mean, if you add 4 more cents, but they need to earn that. $2.13.
They need to earn their keep.
They do need to earn their keep.
All
yes.
right.
Right. And
yes.
You know what's another funny story? I was actually 12 when I found out how much prisoners make in our prison. Mm-hmm. And so when everyone else was figuring this out during the fires and everything, and the fact that these prisoners, when they're released, they don't get like a letter from, you know, CDC, the California Department of Corrections, or anyone saying, hey, look, this person did a really good job. They fought X amount of fires for X amount of days. They have experience doing this. You should hire them, sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And the fact that they don't get any recommendation, that they're not able to have that upward mobility and turn their really, truly, as we try to say that our criminal justice system does, turn their lives around.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not even able to do that. And
right.
so I was 12 when I found that out. My mom used to be a captain of a fire camp here in California, not that far from where I live now, called Mountain Home.
Mm-hmm.
And I was 12 when my mom told me how much they get paid. And I remember at 12 years old thinking, what?
Mm-hmm.
You know, 12 years old in like 2001, I guess you would say, being like, wait, what? They get paid what? And me saying, how is that okay, though?
Mm-hmm.
You know, even at that age, at 12, understanding that $2.13 a day for them putting their lives on the line and risking everything and not really having a choice. A lot of these people do not have a choice in the matter. They are told, you're going to this place, this is what you're going to be doing,
mm-hmm.
As a result of you paying your debt to society.
Right.
And my mom, you know, telling me this and me being like, wow, that is what California, and that's what we as Americans think of prisoners.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, I mean, I'm not surprised that Kamala Harris is trying to spin it now and say that she's a progressive prosecutor. Well, Kamala, why were you a prosecutor and not a public defender, I guess, is my question.
Right.
If you were really a progressive person trying to change the laws, she made a choice. She mm-hmm. chose to be a public prosecutor instead of a public defender.
Right.
That was the choice that she made because she wanted the prestige. She wanted the moving forward and upward mobility because it's a lot easier to become a senator when you're a public prosecutor.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot easier to become an attorney general when you're a public prosecutor
right.
than it is if you're a public defender. And so she made that choice, if
yes.
that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's something that's always – the first time I heard that, I was like, wait, prisons in America? Like – what, 23 cents an hour, $2 a day? I was like, that, because all I had in my head was like, that's what it sounds like in those like those really tacky like Christian missionary commercials, right? For $2 a day you can feed a starving child in Ethiopia. I was like, $2, what? Like in America? Yeah, like the wait, American prisoners? Like in America, like people are making 20 cents an hour in America. Really?
Oh my,
you know,
god.
Yeah.
You
yes.
just you hate what? capitalism.
Yes, yes, I do.
After what, like 6 days? That's a month of Netflix, okay? Like they're balling.
Okay.
Pretty sure they don't get Netflix in prison.
Yeah, maybe.
That was a progressive policy,
okay,
giving
I
inmates
love
Netflix.
This conversation right now, I have to say, this conversation is everything right now. Like, you guys have exactly the right amount of sarc and sarcasm that I use in my personal life, and I'm really appreciating it. So.
Yes, this is what we do. This is a yes. This now, is who we are as people.
You mentioned your mother teaching you about this. Going way off script. Like anything else about your mother that is progressive that you would like to share?
So I mean, yeah, I can definitely tell you a little bit more about my background. So I'm biracial. I know that's kind of a weird phrase to use because really, if anyone looks at me, they're going to say I'm black, and I fully accepted my blackness, but. I also acknowledge that I had a white father. And so my father and mother both did a really good job, I think, of preparing me for the hardship that I was going to endure in this life as a black man.
Mm-hmm.
They both worked in corrections. So both of them were law enforcement or cops, as you would say, right?
Mm-hmm.
But they were not cops who were like, this system works, it's great, it's wonderful, like lock them up sort of thing. They were cops that were like, hey, look, we do this because we started doing this for a job. But the more we did it, the more we began to realize that this is not a job. This is slavery. Mm-hmm. And so I would say my parents were both very good at letting me know, hey, look, this is the reality of what our job is like. In fact, I remember my dad when I was first going to college, and he asked me, what, you know, what am I going to do sort of thing. I remember him telling me, you can do anything you want, but you will not go into law enforcement. Mm-hmm. And it was like, whoa, okay. Like, my dad never really put hard limit on me onto what I could do, because I was a smart kid. I grew up in high school. I had a 3.63 or something like that. Mm-hmm. I was a smart kid. I wasn't a dummy. I could have done anything and still could do anything I want to do. And so my dad putting that limit on me and saying, this is what you're not going to do, was interesting. And my dad was white. And so my dad was white, and my mother is black. And so they instilled a lot of liberal or progressive ideas within me, right? So I would say that my dad was, he was definitely a woke white guy, right? So my dad was definitely not stupid. He was not blind to the fact that not only is racism real, not only is sexism, homophobia, et cetera, are not only are those things real, but he was not you know, blind to the fact that people that look like him have perpetuated a lot of it. And so my father was very instrumental in instilling in me that lesson of, hey, look, you came from me, and I'm going to do everything I can to prepare you for the road that's ahead of you. But I don't know what that road looks like, because I don't look like you. I don't have the same, I don't know what you're going to go through. All I can do is tell you what I've seen people go through in my life. And so my dad definitely instilled in me. And I remember asking him, because my dad was a lifelong Democrat up until his death. I'm an independent, but I was a lifelong Democrat until last year. Mm-hmm. And so my dad really, I remember asking him at, 10 years old, 6 years old even, why are we Democrats? Why are our family Democrats? I mean, my dad's a white boy from Idaho. He was a white boy from Idaho. and he looked like a skinhead. My dad cut his hair really short. He had green eyes. He was, white. So he's definitely not what you would think of textbook Democratic voter sort of thing.
Okay.
And so my dad, I remember asking him at a young age, why are we Democrats? And my dad, I remember, I think I was probably finally like 16 years old when my dad said, son, we're Democrats because we care about helping people. And he, he qualified it, of course. He said, Democrats haven't always done a good job of that, but mm-hmm. when it counts, we have. Mm-hmm. And this was, he died in 2008. So you figure this was, 2004 or 5 when he told me this. Mm-hmm. And so, of course, back then, I think we all kind of still had that. Our hopes were with the Democratic Party, right? They're the good guys. They're the ones who are working for us. Now, 13 years later or whatever it is, I would hope a lot of us have come to the conclusion that they don't give a fuck about any of us. For all of them, there are a couple, right? There are a few of them who we can say comfortably, yeah, they're doing what they can with what they have sort of thing. Mm-hmm. But back then my dad was very adamant that, look, this is the progressive ideals are the way that our country needs to go. Right. And it's the way that I'm going to raise you sort of thing. Okay. And so that was, as far as my dad goes, as far as my mom goes, she, my mom's kind of still a neoliberal. Like, she loves Kamala. Does not support my Senate campaign. When I told her I was running for Kamala's seat, regardless of if, Senator Harris was still in office or she became POTUS, uh-huh. Her response was sort of, well, if she becomes POTUS, you might have a chance sort of thing. And so, but I don't hold that against her. I think that it's easy to tell people what they can't do, what you think they can do. It's a lot harder to inspire people and say, hey, you know what, that crazy thing that you said you're going to do, I think you can do that. Mm-hmm. So I don't hold that against my mother.
Okay. So can we ask, how old are you?
Yeah, I'm 30. So I just turned 30 this last year in September.
Team Millennials for the win. We're going to save...
Okay, hashtag Team Millennials.
Yes, we're going to save the world even if it kills us.
Oh, I'm sorry. I have to go now. I have to go eat avocado toast and tweet about how the baby boomers are ruining everything.
What, are you telling me that you wasted your mortgage on avocado toast? You would have a fully paid house by now if you would just stop eating avocados?
I'm telling you that I did not think to buy an avocado tree. I just thought, I'll just buy a $12 order of avocado toast everywhere I go. And I have a stack of receipts that are just lined up that I can provide to you. So,
All right.
In fact, we've already decided as a campaign that 30% of our budget is going to be spent on avocado toast. That's minimum.
See? Tax and spend.
I love it.
Pay-go.
We're ready to pay-go, bro.
Oh my god, that shit, man.
Yes. Please tell us your feelings about that.
Well, pay-go's nonsense. I mean, we talked earlier about MMT, and so the idea behind MMT is, again, that the federal government is not constrained by a deficit. It's not constrained by, budgetary constricts. It's constrained only by real resources and labor demand and a couple of other factors. But, those are the main precepts of MMT, right? And I recommend people follow Real Progressives. I recommend you follow Dr. Stephanie Kelton, who does a great job of elaborating on this. But the basic premise is PAYGO's bullshit, right? PAYGO's bullshit. That's bullshit. It's a stupid rule that Democrats have used to hamper any true chance of a progressive agenda being passed. I mean, and the saddest part is we had only three Democratic, representatives in the House stand up and say, hey, look, this is bullshit. Ro Khanna, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, and I think the other one was Tulsi, right? Tulsi Gabbard. Yeah. And those are the only three who stood up and said, no, we're not voting for this package, this rules package. And so for the Democrats to pretend like we need to pay for things by taxing before we can enact legislation, we have to, like you mentioned before, we have to tax and spend. That's just not how the macroeconomic system works. It's just not.
Right.
When you dive deep into it, you realize, hey, look, why is this conversation only come up whenever we want to do something for poor people? And so before I learned about MMT and before I started researching how the government spending actually works, I used to ask that question. I used to be like, why do we only have this conversation whenever we're trying to do something for poor people?
Right.
We never have this conversation where we're bombing brown and black people across the world. We never have this conversation when we're lowering taxes for people who don't need it. We never have that conversation. But anytime we want to do something like pass Medicare for All or Green New Deal, the immediate question that people have is, how are you going to pay for it?
Right.
And it's like, where were you when we were paying for all this other shit that we didn't need?
Exactly.
And so, it's needless to say that PAYGO to me is anathema. I think it's disgusting. I think it's austerity at its worst.
Mm-hmm.
It's the idea that we have to limit the things that we are capable of doing on behalf of the people to provide for the common defense and the general welfare in favor of making sure that we can, quote, unquote, afford it. And I'm just not for that.
Right. Absolutely. No, I like it. Yeah?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I dig you. Like, you're the shit, yo. Like, you're fucking awesome. Like, I'm a boring old hetero, but, like, I'll leave my wife. I can cook. I'm handy. I'm good around the house. You know?
I'm fucking... I'm already engaged to Hassan Piker. I don't know if you guys are familiar with Hassan Piker, but I have, like, a little pipe dream in the back of my mind that we're going to end up married one day. But I do appreciate the offer.
I will rap battle him for your heart. I'm nice.
Oh, that's amazing. I would love to see that. Like, I might just have you do that just for the watch, just for the ability to be able to stream it for people. That's hilarious.
Hell
yeah. Thank you for hanging out in the wine cellar. This is how we behave. We're fun.
I love this. I have my team on the back end. My team's messaging me and they're cracking up.
Oh, are they?
One of my team members was like, they were laughing at the bi comment you made. They said, oh my gosh, that's so hilarious, because I think they also might identify with us as well.
Oh,
so,
okay.
We have quite a diverse team. So yeah, they were cracking up about that.
Awesome. We're coming up on our time. The wine cellar typically does about an hour.
Really? And an hour already?
Yes, ma'am.
Wow.
Tell the folks who you are again.
Yes, of course. So my name is John Michael Williams, or JM, and I'm running to represent the people of California in the United States Senate. I'm running for the seat currently held by Kamala Harris. That election will be in 2022, November, I think it's 7th, I want to say, November 7th, 2022.
Mm-hmm.
We are going to be running regardless of who holds the seat, whether she becomes president, someone else gets appointed for the meantime, whether there's a special election. It doesn't matter what happens. We are going to be running to represent the people in that seat come 2023, the following year. So we would appreciate your support. Please like us on Facebook. Please follow us on Twitter, on Instagram. We just filed with the SEC today, so our SEC paperwork is legit. Nice. I posted it on our Twitter. You can see everything has been posted. We'll have a bank account up soon so people can donate. But we are definitely committed to running on people power. And although I meant to say earlier, we're not accepting corporate donations, obviously. We are not going to be accepting any money from corporate tax. We're not going to pull a Kamala and say, we're not accepting corporate tax. Now, after we've already been elected, we are going to, from the beginning, reject corporate money. And so we are 100% people-powered, 100% small donations, preferably, and 100%, you know, based on what you guys think and what we need to do as a people to move forward.
I love it. So if anyone is in California and wanted to help out and volunteer, who would they contact or where would they go?
So we're still doing all of that set up. Okay. Right now, the best thing to do is, again, to like follow us on Facebook. You can look for us on Facebook. It's JM for California. We're trying to get our website up. I've set the goal of having our website up. I think I want to say by February 15th is the goal that I've set, or I should say at least have it be working on. I really like it up by March 1st.
You're not going to do it like Kamala, where it's just like the link to your merch and not your platform, right? Like, oh my God, did you even know?
Oh God, no.
My co-host didn't know that.
Dude,
she did
what
that.
Was that all about?
Yeah, right.
Like,
here's my website.
Earlier, and I'm like, what is this?
Here's my website. I'm running for president in 2020. Buy my shit. Like,
okay. Can you do like, buy my shit. And then she, like, the color scheme was so weird to me. I'm like, gave you that color scheme? She did like red and yellow and blue. It's like, girl,
why?
This is not fucking elementary painting. Like, what are you doing? Like, that's like the colors I give my elementary school kids to, like, color with, like, to make other colors. Like, which colors do you have to make purple? And which colors do you have to make green? Like, what was that shit?
Well, basic is as basic does.
I'm gonna do what?
I said basic is as basic does.
Yo, so it's not just...
Okay, basic is as basic does.
It ain't just Kamala Harris is a cop.
We're definitely going to have a website with a full platform, with our policy position. We're already working on a few bills. There is obviously a list of bills that we would co-sponsor and add on to. And so, yeah, we're not going to do a Kamala and have a half-baked policy platform. We want to have our policy fully in the public. This is what we believe. This is what we're going to fight for. This is the ways that we're going to fight for it. And, you know, the thing, and just really quickly, because I know we're almost out of time, but I think it's so funny that we hear this. Well, I support this. Well, like, saying you support something is completely different than saying, I support this, therefore I'm going to do X, Y, and Z. Mm-hmm. And so all of our policy platforms that we have laid out are full of, we're going to do X, Y, and Z. We're not going to just say we support this. You know, we don't support access and more affordable coverage. We support the right of every American to have health care coverage, period.
Right.
And this is what we're going to do. We're going to support Bernie Sanders' plan, to enact that coverage. We definitely, I think for right now, what they can do is they can follow me on Twitter. They can follow us on Instagram. They can follow us on Facebook. And for now, I hope, again, by March, our race is in 4 years. I hope by March we'll have a working website up where we can start getting people into groups, start getting people into organizing for canvassing, et cetera, et cetera. Just for now, I think the best thing is for them to follow us.
Excellent. I love
Word
it.
Word up. So, all right. So what you got to do, send Phoenix Kalita the links to all of your platforms, and we're going to post them to our Social Dissonance page on Facebook. It has 60,000 followers. We're going to post the links there.
Yes.
And you just sparked something in my brain. So it's no longer only Kamala Harris is a cop. Because she's just out here selling shit, it is you can get a club card with Cam's Club because it's Kamal Mart.
Oh my God. Yes.
Nigga, you did not just say Kamal Mart. Nigga, you did not just say Kamal Mart.
Yes, ma'am.
I swear to God.
What is all the stuff I hear about Kamalistan? Like, what is Kamalistan? Like, what is that even supposed to be? Like, what? And then I was like, oh, like Stan. Like, they stand for Kamala. But it's like, it almost sounds like a different country. Like, I'm like, what? You're Kamalistan? And I was like looking up countries in Asia, trying to figure out, like, what are they talking about? And I'm like, wait, no, they're just making up dumb shit to try to emphasize the fact that they love neoliberal policies. And that's great. Yeah, I mean, you can do that, but like...
Now, it's right across the border from Agrabah. It's where Aladdin used to kick it. Kamala's fan, you know, with Princess Jasmine keeping it gangster.
What I've seen so far, the amount of, like, white liberal women who are, I can talk black too, is fucking mind-blowing. The Kamalistan,
mind-blowing.
Yeah, it's Kamalistan, it's, she's gangsta checking people, it's,
nigga, what set she from?
Oh my god, if I had a dollar for every person who has told me that I am a racist, then the fact that my picture on Instagram and on Twitter is clearly... a person who is not white, right? Like, clearly, I'm a colored person, so to speak, a person of color. So I think it's so funny because I was told earlier that I'm sexist for criticizing Kamala, and I was like, well, you're a homophobe. It's so sad to see how homophobic you're being. And they were like, well, I didn't even know you were a gay man. It's like, well, no, but you should have known because, you know, how do you even know I identify as a male? As a female. You know, it's just that bullshit of that. That mindset that we can't criticize her when she has a record to criticize. Now, she was just, you know, like me, someone who doesn't have a public official record, never has held office before, then that would be kind of like, no, you need to criticize that person based on the stance that they're proclaiming that they hold. But I could kind of see a little bit more where they're coming from. But no, it's just, you know, just bullshit. It's lessening the meaning and the impact of the word sexism. It's lessening and lessening the meaning of the word racism by saying you're racist or you're a sexist for standing against Kamala when she's done some terrible shit to a lot of women and to a lot of black and brown people. So what do I know, though?
I think that my favorite thing in that is someone who said, if you come for Kamala, we'll, like you did for Hillary, it will be your end. We're done being nice. As Cardi B says, we will dog walk you. Invoking Cardi B quotes to defend Harris. It's a time to be alive. I don't know.
It is a time to be alive. But Cardi B, I think the other day, didn't she say vote for Daddy Bernie? So like,
she did.
Like, get the fuck out of here. Like,
we don't actually, we only need her hotlines. We don't need her ideas. Yeah, we just need her hotlines. We don't actually need to know what she thinks about anything outside of taglines.
Kamala Harris is the mumble rap of black politics. Facts.
Sus. Why are you like this?
My mother.
That's amazing.
Thank you for coming in and making this an outstanding episode.
Yes.
And this is an outstanding episode. Like, I started this shit in 2012. We have over 800 episodes, and this is a fucking classic.
Yes.
And I hope to holy hell that being involved in a podcast like this does not sink you, because we're a little hardcore.
No, not at all.
Yeah, so damn right.
I will gladly come back anytime in the future that y'all want to have me on. Just send me a message, Phoenix. Yes. Send me a message. Say, hey, are you available on this date? And I will gladly come back on your show.
Absolutely, I would love it. This was so fun.
I will make time to come back and talk with y'all. I will make time to come back and talk with you because I've had a great time, and I thank y'all for even wanting to interview me.
Absolutely,
it means a lot to us because, again, we're a low profile campaign. We have people that are like, you're never going to get anywhere, and it's like it's people like y'all that are going to make that difference.
Right.
That are going to get us where we need to go. So anytime you need me to come on, you want me to come on, send us a message, and I will happily make time to do so.
Yes, thank you.
Hell yes. And don't forget to send Phoenix the links to all your platforms so we can post them and boost them. All right? And please be as safe as possible wherever you are.
Absolutely.
All right. Peace, sir.
Thank you.
Bye.
Hell yeah.
Oh, that was good.
That was an episode. That was the shit.
I had such a good time talking with y'all. Y'all are hilarious. Oh my gosh.
Thank you. Yeah, we'll definitely have you back on because that was the first shit.
Excuse me, sir.
Oh, you thought you were in trouble?
I was like, oh shit. My heart dropped. I was like, no, he did not. I was like, oh, he's going to ask you something really serious right now. Okay, be ready.
No, all in fun. All in fun. It's all good.
Yeah, the snark is powerful.
Okay.
All right, we're going to get out of here.
Thank you so much. I think I'm going to go eat dinner.
Yes, go eat dinner. Have your avocados, precious little fucking avocados.
My avocado toast. Yes, I need to have my avocado toast quickly. So I will talk to you all soon. And as I said, please feel free to reach out. I will definitely be glad to come back on your show with you.
Absolutely. Yes. Sounds fantastic.
All right. Peace. All right,
thank you. Have a good
one. Thank you. Y'all have a good one.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Yes.
That was fun.
All right. WineCellarMedia.com, PayPal.me/PhoenixAndWilliam, Patreon.com/WineCellarMediaFund.